I assumed that it was implicit to you and your subjects, said Lindarin. See that you misstep no further in this regard.
We shall extend to you whatever aid we can, as will all of our subjects,
said the governor, pinning her brother with a steady look before turning her attention back to Lindarin.
We ask that in return you and your warriors do what you can to garner the goodwill of our people. Understand, we ask not out of any hope that you will go against your essential natures in this, but only that, from a strategic point of view, the worse you alienate and terrify them, the harder a task our arbitrators will have in keeping them from heeding the call of the cult.
I can promise little, my lady, but we will do what we can to avoid furnishing the enemy with needless reinforcement, replied Lindarin. And with this, I must depart. There are battles that demand my attention, and I wish to review the findings of my intelligence gatherers. We are doing what we can to outthink and outmaneuver the heretics, lest another tragedy occur.
Our thanks, Brother Librarian, said the governor. Go with the Emperor's grace.
Lindarin made the sign of the Aquila and departed the chamber. He had crossed the antechamber and made his way down a flight of marble stairs before he heard soft footsteps following. Lindarin slowed his pace as he crossed a softly lit intersection and popped open the holster of his heavy bolt pistol. However, the figure that hastened up behind him was little more than a child. Clad in the vestments of a bishopal novitiate, the boy stumbled to a halt at the sight of Lindarin, towering above him.
Speak, Lindarin ordered, in no mood for further delays.
He could already hear Storn lecturing him on the evils of being away from the battlefront for too long, how it was just such behaviour that had driven Hastor to behave as he did. Self-doubt was needling the librarian, and he felt the need for the clarity that the pain gauntlet would bring.
My master requests audience, my lord,
squeaked the boy, barely able to get the words out.
He bids you follow me.
My time and patience both are worn thin, replied Lindarin, beginning to turn away. Tell your master that if he wishes to summon one of the Adeptus Astartes, he would be better to do so in person.
The boy looked at the floor for a moment, expression stricken. Just as Lindarin began to walk away, however, the child managed to speak again, in a breathless rush.
He said that you would say this, my lord, and he begs your indulgence in a matter of the utmost urgency. He said to tell you that some on the council speak with a crooked tongue, and that he knows where dwells the father of their lies.
It was a clumsy enough code, but it was enough to halt Lindarin in his tracks. His mind worked swiftly, and with an impatient grunt, he turned back.
Hurry, then. But if your master is wasting my time, he will wish he had not.
The boy swallowed, then turned and hurried away down a side corridor. The child moved at a nervous trot, but one that Lindarin soon found himself outpacing.
Run! For I have neither time nor patience left to waste, he commanded,
and after a frightened glance in his direction, the boy increased his pace. They passed several shadowy chambers and looming statues before climbing another flight of stairs and emerging into a darkened corridor. Lindarin saw glass cases and plinths and realized that he was in a display gallery of some sort, perhaps a museum or weapons hall. The boy looked around anxiously, his eyes less able to pierce the shadows than Lindarin's, and the librarian felt a moment's disquiet as he heard the subtle heartbeat and breathing of another concealed somewhere in the chamber's shadowed reaches. Surely even the most resourceful of enemies would not have contrived to assail him here. All the same, the librarian summoned his empiric energies to him again, feeling his psychic hood heat as ripples of disturbance ran through the weft of the warp. A shape detached itself from a pool of darkness near the chamber's far end and resolved itself into the slight form of Lottimer Renwick. The bishop glided softly towards Lindarin across the carpeted floor, brushing his hand out in a shooing gesture to the boy as he came. Leave. With a grateful nod, the child turned and fled, though not before snatching a last wide-eyed look at Lydaran.
Bishop Renwick, why am I here when I should be returning to battle? Asked Lydaran.
I do not seek to waste your time, Brother Librarian, said the bishop, eyes glinting beneath his cowl. I sense shadows gathering all around us, and would tell you something that I learned from one of my preachers this day just past.
Speak, then, said Lydaran, his intrigue warring with his wariness.
Just hours ago, one of my preachers was walking the streets of the Commercias, but a level from where the catastrophe occurred at the Van Sappen warehouse, said Renwick. My man was approached by what he described as a shadowy character who wore miner's garb and glare goggles. He said this individual looked somehow wrong to him, though he could not place why.
Brevity, Bishop, said Lydaran.
Just so, replied Renwick, looking chastened. The mysterious figure attempted to convince my preacher to abandon his faith and to give his worship instead to Father. Of course, my man reacted with all the piety and wrath one might hope, but though he decried the cultist as the heretic he was, he was unable to stop the figure from escaping before the Arbites arrived.
Brazen. But I fail to see how this is useful to me, said Lydaran.
My preacher reported the figure's words to me verbatim, Brother Librarian, and I believe that in this exchange our enemy may have made a crucial slip. Reportedly, the figure uttered the words, Come with me to Father's side, for in the darkness of the deepened delve shalt thou find the light.
Lydaran looked at Renwick uncomprehendingly.
My apologies, Brother Librarian. You are not a man of local parlance. Why would you be?
Enlighten me, said Lydaran through gritted teeth, his patience worn by the bishop's rambling manner.
Of course, said Renwick, leaning closer as though to confide some great secret.
He shot a glance around him before speaking again.
The deepened delve, Brother Librarian, is local slang. It refers to the Delve Mine, the holdings of Great Clan Delve.
You are telling me that this mysterious figure may accidentally have revealed that Father lurks within the Delve Mine, and that by extension Lord Dostos Delve and his people may be of the cult? Asked Lydaran.
Renwick answered with a nervy nod, looking about him again. Lydaran became very still. The bishop's heartbeat was steady, and there was no tremor of nervousness or mistruth in his voice. If he was providing genuine intelligence, then he might just have handed Lydaran the key to unlocking this entire sorry puzzle. Yet there had been so much trickery and veiled corruption already, so many baited traps. Lydaran was not about to take Renwick at his word, without first pushing hard to see if some hidden redoubt of falsehoods cracked. He teased his powers into being, and subtly increased the weight of his presence, summoning an oppressive weight that literally pressed down upon the bishop's slight form. Lydaran glowered down at him.
You understand the consequences if I find that you have lied to me? He asked, his voice deep and menacing.
Of course, my lord, but I am a faithful servant of the Emperor, exclaimed Renwick, looking genuinely alarmed.
Lydaran smelled the man's fear sweat prickling his skin.
And you understand that they will be no less severe if it transpires that you are being used as an unwitting bearer of falsehoods and trickery?
Lydaran leaned a little heavier on the bishop and added a slight background kinetic tremor that made the shadowy exhibits shudder and rattle. The man's eyes were wide now, and Lydaran could see he was shaking with alarm. He looked honestly bewildered that his information had received such a hostile reception.
I swear to you upon my faith, Brother Librarian, the man that brought this to me is as loyal and true as I am myself. There is no falsehood here, no trickery. If I have angered you in some way, then please tell me how I might make amends for such a sin.
Renwick was cracking, Lydaran saw, but not through any concealment of guilt. It was just good, honest fear, and that he understood. If Renwick's tip-off was a trick,
Lydrum believed it must be one that even the bishop himself was unaware of. That possibility still played upon the librarian's mind, but Astorn himself had said more than once, "Victory to the bold, and only death left for the timid."
"We will investigate this information," said Lydrum, already keying runic commands into his vambrace.
Servo-skulls, vanguard infiltrators and orbital surveillance augurs would turn their gaze upon Delvmine with all haste, and if there was anything to be seen there, the Imperial Fists would see it. Meanwhile, he reined in his powers and released the quaking bishop from their grasp. The man uttered a little gasp of relief. The exhibit stopped their earthquake quiver and fell silent again.
"Thank you, Brother Librarian. That is all that I can ask," said Renwick, his words drenched in pitiful relief.
As Lydaran turned away, the small man caught hold of his arm with a feverish grip.
"Please, Brother Librarian, this is a good world, a faithful world, and we do not deserve a heretic's fate. Deliver us."
Lydaran nodded once, then strode away.
"I will," he answered over his shoulder.
Chapter 8. Lydaran had returned to Mercurio Gate only a handful of times in the 15 days since the Imperial Fists had made planetfall. In part, the constant demands of the campaign had kept him moving from one engagement to the next, leading assault groups, sweeping and purging one sector after another, and snatching moments of rest and meditation where he could. If he was honest with himself, though, the librarian had also avoided the spaceport for the memories it held. He had enough to manage commanding this tangled conflict, keeping a tight grip upon the reins of not only his own warriors, but of the Gyrish conclave as well, and trying not to overtax his mind and powers to the point where something disastrous occurred. Lydaran had felt more than once the greasy squirm and slither of malefic warp entities encircling his soul, stalking him from beyond the veil, awaiting the slightest opening. Driven to his limits and starving off mental exhaustion through willpower alone, he didn't think reminders of Tor's death would help him retain control. This day, however, Mercurio Gate could not be avoided. This day, they mustered for the attack. Lydaran strode through the bustle of the spaceport, past prefab ramparts and strongpoints stamped with the chapter badge of the Imperial Fists, past arming servitors lumbering beneath heavy loads, between squads of battle brothers swearing their oaths, and platoons of Gyrish soldiery quick marching towards whatever duties they had been assigned. At Storm's suggestion, the Strike Force had co-opted Mercurio Gate as their base of operations, refusing the Governor's offer of more fitting quarters in favour of being ever ready to mobilise from within a defensible position of their own fortification. It was a good plan, with only one drawback. During the darkness of night, even the combined illumination from all the hive spire structures could not entirely wash out the twisted stars. The Imperial Fists had the spiritual fortitude to ignore the many coloured stains that curled and twisted through the void like mutant aurorae. The same was not true of the Chapter Serfs, who had accompanied them to the planet's surface, nor their Gyrish allies. More than one had begun gibbering or became senselessly violent after too long labouring beneath the poison stars. Initially, those losses had simply been replaced, the Space Marines judging a few mortal derangements a small price to pay for increased speed of refueling and rearming. However, since his conversation a few nights earlier with the Governor and her closest aides, Lydaran had instated a new rule. The Imperial Fists alone would walk in the open during the hours of darkness, the Gyrish emerging from sleep shelters as dawn's first light spilled over the horizon and washed out the monstrous stellar phenomena. Such was the case now, Serf crewmen and Gyrish soldiery venturing into the pale daylight to aid the Imperial Fists in any way they could. The arrangement was just one facet of the improved relations between the Gyrish and their liberators, both pleased that progress had been made, but also frustrated
that had taken so long to achieve. Ahead of Lydran loomed the Thunderhawk Vengeful, its assault ramp lowered to allow boarding. The same assault ramp upon which Captain Tor had died, thought Lydran. Before he could stop himself, he had shot a cold glance in the direction of the cooling towers from which the shot had come.
"What is done, Brother Librarian," came Storn's grating voice, floating out in greeting from within the Thunderhawk's bay. "If you want to glare, aim that wrath at the future, not the past, the one your anger can still affect."
Storn thumped down the ramp to clasp gauntlets with Lydran in a warrior's greeting.
"There is a lot to glare back at," said Lydran, with a slight grimace, thinking of Hastur,
of the death or wounding of more than a score of battle brothers in ambushes, gunfights, bomb blasts, and frantic pursuits. Storn grunted in what might have been agreement.
"Same is true in any campaign, Astur. This one has just been more drawn out and complicated than most. Give me a good, honest siege any day," said the librarian, as the two of them turned and walked up the ramp into the gunship's belly.
"Spoken like a true son of Dawn," replied Storn with a crooked grin. "Truth is, Tor's plan was a good one, but even he didn't predict how deep-rooted the heresy on this world would prove. The Adeptus Astartes are weapons of open war, not all this hunting and policing and snatching at shadows. If we had our time again, I wonder if we would not simply have come down bolters blazing and deciphered who was friend or foe after the shooting ceased."
Lydran shook his head, staring back out of the Thunderhawk, at Gyarish and Space Marines moving industriously around one another in the dawn light.
"I do not believe that," he said. "I do not believe that would have been worthy of us, nor would it have met our objectives. Where would we have struck?" "Claritos Hive, perhaps," said Storn. "There are few shades of grey about that place. And yet, this foe is cunning. They have shown us that much. While we vented our fury upon a half-ruined and wholly hostile city, the enemy would have made their move to seize the last loyal Gyarish bastion from us, and likely slain the governor and all her advisers into the bargain. It might have been a swifter and more clean-cut battle, brother, but ultimately the decision would have forced us to destroy all that we came here to save, and seen the entire world turned against us."
"Ha! Tor would be proud," said the chaplain. "But now, look. Here I am counselling you to focus upon what lies ahead, yet it is you that has turned my gaze from the past."
Storn shook his head, as though in self-chastisement. But Lydran couldn't escape the feeling that he had just been tested on some level.
"I had thought we were building a bond these past days," he said, his voice becoming hard. "Still you push and probe, as though seeking weaknesses in a green novitiate rather than a valued comrade. I know my worth and that of my powers, brother chaplain. It is time you recognize them also."
Storm became still, his granite features unreadable. Then he nodded, and for a moment only, Lydran thought the chaplain looked tired and old.
"Vigilance is a habit hard broken. Judgment a duty the chapter demands from me always," he said. "But you are right, Brother Librarian. We are comrades in this, commanding officer and valued counselor, not neophyte and pedagogue. My apologies."
Lydran grunted an acknowledgement, though in truth he felt a stirring of pride at Storn's words. If there was one warrior upon this world whose approval he desired, Lydran could admit to himself that it was Storn. Such validation firmly bolstered his confidence as the strike force's leader.
"The Gyarish are finally upholding their end of the campaign, as we would hope," he said, changing the subject to more practical matters. "Purgation of Commercias was declared complete as of 1900 hours yesterday, and I received word on my way here that Orbitus has been declared secure this morning. With Militaris purged and secure now too, that only leaves Acquisitorus and the Laboratus," said Storn.
Lydran nodded, thinking of the reports they had received,
of sudden and explosive violence in the Militaris district when the High Marshal's new edicts came down. Imperial Fists and Adeptus Arbites alike had worked with Gyrish Commissariat officers, and even priests to vet and sanction each garrison tower in turn. Lockdown curfews had held each platoon of soldiery in place until their faith and purity could be ascertained and their fitness to serve be assured. The measures must have wounded the High Marshal's pride immeasurably, not to mention his reputation amongst his soldiery. But sure enough, they had yielded immediate results. Like insects scuttling out from beneath upturned rocks, the traitors amidst the ranks had been revealed.
"Casualties were lighter than I expected," Lydran mused. "There were fewer heretic infiltrators than we predicted."
"Any more than none is too damned many," growled Storn. "Needs must while the warp waxes. But once this world is secured, there'll be some hard questions for everyone in charge. The type asked by the Ordo Xenos.
For now, though, their cleansing, coupled with the High Marshal pulling back more platoons from the mines, means we have the manpower to at last push down into the Laboratus," said Lydran.
"If we need to, after today," noted Storn. "You've reviewed the reports?"
"Inloaded them fully," replied Lydran.
"Delvmine is corrupt, that much is clear. But to suggest the cult are hiding farther there... I'm not so sure this deity of theirs is even a physical being, so much as a figurehead woven from lies and rhetoric."
"Huh. Sounds like great efforts have been made to conceal it from the airborne regiments and the Magi who maintain the macro-purgation firethrowers," said Storn.
"Scratch a little deeper, though, and there's every indication of a veritable cult fortress lurking under the Conclave's collective notice. Coordinated, organized, and heavily defended. It's as likely a sight as we've seen yet for their leaders to lurk, even if one of them isn't the false god himself."
"Even if we succeed in executing their leaders, there is no guarantee the cult will just collapse," warned Lydran.
"True, brother, but in my experience, few mortals have the drive or rhetoric to whip the masses into sedition and heresy. Shorn of their agitators, this cult may lose cohesion and purpose, to the point where we can depart safe in the knowledge that local forces can conclude the purge.
Or, if there is truly some deeper xenoform taint behind the writhing worm, then new leaders may simply emerge elsewhere on Gaia,"
countered Lydran.
"Their god may be a more complex concept or being than we have so far envisaged. Their cohesive purpose may stem from some collective consciousness or parasitic drive that renders the concept of individual leaders meaningless."
"Dawn's blood, brother! You analyze every action you take down to the last grains of detail," said Storn,
slapping one armored palm against Lydran's shoulder guard.
"It must be exhausting."
"I am merely explaining why we are striking with a limited force, rather than committing everything to this offensive," said Lydran with a frown. "If the assault is ineffectual, or if this proves to be another of the enemy's snares, we need strength enough within Angelica's hive to proceed with the push into the Laboratus,
or to counter anything the enemy may try while we have forces committed to the attack upon Delvmine," said Storn. "Wise, my brother. Very wise. You have doubts about Renwick's claims, then?
Though I will fight to protect this world and its people, the sights we have seen coming here have left me with doubts about every citizen of Gaia," replied Lydran. "Even the planet's leading bishop is not exempt."
"Again, wise," said Storn.
And Lydran heard unalloyed respect in the chaplain's tone. It shored up his convictions.
"Come. It is time," said Lydran, with a grim smile.
"Gather the breaching force and let us mobilize.
For all this wise talk, it will feel good to fight a clear-cut battle at last."
A trio of gunships lifted off from Mercurio Gate, two carrying Imperial Fist Space Marines and supporting walkers, the third a transporter whose adamantine grapples cradled a Vindicator siege tank named Hammerblow, and a destructor pattern predator whose flank bore the name Blade Indomitable, and whose first combat action was said to have occurred over 4,000 years before. As the gunships burned thrusters and punched through the dawn sky towards the edge of Hive Spire, a squadron of Storm Talon gunships swept in to take up escort positions. It was a substantial force, a good half of all the materiel that Captain Tor had led down upon Gaia. Lydra knew that to commit so many of his warriors to this endeavour was a risk, but he believed it to be a calculated one, well worthwhile. At best, a force of this size would fall like the Emperor's own sword upon the enemy's fastness, shatter their defences with a speed that only the siege masters of the Imperial Fists could achieve, trap the cult's leadership cadre behind their own defences, and see them butchered before full daylight touched the spire tops. At worst, so formidable a force of the Adeptus Astartes would be the equal of any trap the enemy sprang. Either way, by the close of the day, the Imperial Fists would have reminded everyone on Gaia, even themselves, of the speed, ferocity, and strength with which they could strike down the enemies of the Imperium. It would make for a potent statement to counter the propaganda of the cult and put the fear of Imperial vengeance into them and their sympathizers both. Lydran beseeched the spirits of Vengeful's external senses and patched their vidfeed directly into his autosensors. He watched the last towers of Hive Spire race up towards him, framed against the vastness of Gaia's skies. They swept past, and he felt the Thunderhawk angle steeply down, his view tilting as it aimed its prow for the ground far, far below. The mountainous flanks of Hive Angelica shot past, cargo lighters and grav skiffs scattering from the Space Marine's flight path as their craft arrowed downwards. Exchanger towers, Vox beacons, strobing lumen and smog-belching stacks flashed to either side, jutting from the Hive's metal skin, in a riotous profusion that reminded Lydran of a cactus's spines. They streaked past stained armour-glass windows 100 feet high, past the jutting tongues of mercantile air jetties and the menacing barrels of defence turrets by the hundred. Despite their speed, minutes passed as the aircraft continued their journey down the Hive Cyclopean slopes. Lydran meditated, shutting out the vox chatter of pilot helots, the chanted oaths of his battle brothers, and the steady rumble of the gunship's engines. He focused inward and gathered his mental strength for the fight to come.
Tor, brother, let me be right about this. And if we are deceived, let them fear our wrath.
Hive base approaching. 20 seconds to misbelt, came the pilot's voice. Lydran opened his eyes in time to see the immense legs of the Hive city racing past. They were an incredible feat of engineering, like the structures that held Promethean derricks and electropylons up, but infinitely sturdier, embraced by hundreds of massive support struts and crossbeams. Lydran could see the tracks of the funicular railway that ran down this nearest leg, industrial in its scale, to carry the miners from the stations throughout Laboratus and down through the mists to the mines below. He also saw the purgation shrines that clung to the legs like crustaceans, the muzzles of their fire throwers pointed unwaveringly down into the mist. In their lee, strung perilously between metal beams and dangling from elaborate webworks of cable and rope, were the structures of the underslums. Foreleg, Widdershin, Railtown, Canopies, his eidetic memory supplied. Names given by the destitute, but unbowed to furnish their desperate dwellings with the veneer of hope. The mist raced up to meet Vengeful, and the gunship plunged beneath its surface. Suddenly, they were surrounded by a soft, lambently glowing haze. It pressed in around the gunship, veiling its sister craft from sight, concealing everything more than a few feet distant. Lydran felt the cold of the mists, as though their clammy caress were slithering across his skin, rather than the armoured hull of his transport. The gunship pulled up hard and sharp, and Lydran had a split-second glimpse of the jungle canopy as it swept close below. Bioluminescent pods and glowing stems pulsed with purples, greens, blues and pinks. Many-hued tendrils coiled and writhed. Ink-black spines burst from neon-blue succulents to clang against the hull like bullets.
"Approach vector locked. Data SAM spooling," voxed the pilot. "Formation holding 20 feet below effective Auspex coverage."
"Good work, Hellet. You honour your chapter, as do your comrades," replied Lydran.
"Thank you, my lord,"
replied the Hellet, sounding pleased despite the strain of intense concentration in his voice. They were flying no more than a few feet above the turbulent canopy of Gaia's jungle, Lydran knew, ensuring that their enemies would not have a chance to detect their approach until the Space Marines were all but upon them.
"Brothers, gird your souls for battle," Lydran said, switching to force-wide vox. "Beneath this veil of mists, our enemies have fortified their lair. Hidden from the Emperor's gaze, they have multiplied like insects, spawning beneath a stone. Now we shall rip that stone away, and in the cold light of vengeance, they will wither and die. The time for mercy is past. All targets are to be considered hostile within the Clan Delve compound. Some may be innocent of heresy, untainted by the touch of whatever Xenos madness has taken their kin. Yet they are complicit all the same. Ignorance, fear, laxity. These are none of them excuses for allowing this rot to spread around them. All are judged guiltily. All must know the vengeance of the Imperium. For Dawn and for Terror! For Dawn and for Terror!"
they shouted in response, and Lydran heard steel in every voice. They were as ready to strike a real blow as he thought. Whatever awaited them in Delve Mine, he pitied it.
"Enemy compound on long-range Auspex," reported their pilot.
"Interrogating machine spirits, triangulating defences," added his gunner. "Commence the attack," Lydran commanded. "For the Emperor!"
The high walls of the compound appeared so suddenly out of the murk that Lydran almost missed them, as Vengeful flashed overhead. He had a fleeting impression of towering ferrocrete cliffs, a good 100 feet high, looming over the encroaching jungle and studded with fire throwers and watchtowers. Even now, the flame turrets were in operation, spitting tongues of burning promethium at the glowing bioflora and withering it back on every front. Missiles and lasblasts leapt from the wings and muzzles of Space Marine gunships as the craft shot overhead. Switching for a moment to Vengeful's rear images, Lydran saw flame turrets detonate in roaring columns of fire, saw armoured watchtowers explode and rubble crashing and tumbling down the lee faces of the walls. He had a moment to register that the mists were thinner within the compound, and to realise that this was the work of massive fan units that sucked in the vapours and funnelled them through thick pipes to spill out beyond the walls. Then Vengeful was slowing, rotating on its axis and spitting shells, bolts and blasts into the figures, scattering in all directions below it. Lydran saw ferrocrete roads splitting and branching in a complex network between bare and muddy ground. More flame turrets loomed over the approaches to deep quarry pits, the blackened earth around them testament to the jungle's ongoing efforts to push its seeds, spores and roots beyond the walls. Clusters of shanty-like lean-tos, prefab administration structures, machine hangars, tool sheds, guard towers, ecclesiarchal shrines and metal-roofed refectoriums were scattered everywhere. Just to the east of their position, Lydran noted the towering mechanical structures of the primary minehead, overlooked by defensive towers and troglodytic structures dug half into the bedrock itself.
"Ready, brothers!"
he barked, rising from his restraint throne and brandishing his stave as the Thunderhawk descended on howling engines. The craft hit the mud with a bang, and its ramp slammed down. Again, a forceful reminder of Tor's demise flashed through Lydran's mind. Again, he thrust the thoughts away and stormed down the ramp at the head of his warriors. Chaplain Storn and Apothecary Lourdes followed him, one at each shoulder.
and behind them came the intercessors of Squad Furion, the terminators of Squad Lasordis, and the mighty form of Dreadnought Brother Geshmund. A glance showed Lydaran that the other gunship had put down to disgorge more yellow-armoured warriors into the landing zone, while Hammerblow and Blade Indomitable were even now gunning their engines and roaring into position as their lander dusted off again. Figures scattered away from them in all directions through the mist, fleeing for their lives. The hammering guns of the Space Marine aircraft cut them down without mercy, and the Storm Talon shot back and forth overhead, herding the fleeing miners away from the Space Marine landing zone.
"Lydaran to Shipmaster Gavon. We have made uncontested landing, brother," voxed the librarian.
"Understood, brother librarian. Be advised..."
Gavon's words were drowned in a sudden tidal wave of interference. Static, roared and crackled like an inferno. Within it, Lydaran heard vicious hissing and what sounded like whispering voices, spilling over and around one another in a dreadful susurrus. Around him, he saw his brothers pause, some shaking their heads or pressing their hands to the sides of their helms. The interference was deafening, its volume swelling by the moment until, with a curse, Lydaran blink-clicked the rune that would shut his vox off altogether. Nothing happened. Still, the babbling din washed over him, now laced through with a thrumming basso note that reverberated through his skull with violent intensity. His alarm grew as the psychocircuitry of his hood began to heat. Lydaran disengaged his helm seals and wrenched it from his head with a curse. He spun around, gesturing at his brothers to do the same. Some had already followed suit, and the others hastily took their lead. He saw that black veins marred the flesh of the worst affected, who stumbled and blinked and grubbed away bloody tears that leaked from their eyes.
"Primarch's fist! Damnation!"
The vox-amplified shout had come from behind Lydaran, and he turned to see veteran Sergeant Lasordis and his warriors staggering and cursing under the psychic assault. So bulky was their armour that they could not remove their own helms without the aid of arming helots, Lydaran realised, and now they were as good as trapped.
"Brothers, aid them!"
commanded Lydaran, sending several of Squad Furion running to the veterans' sides. At the same moment, a hail of fire whipped out of the mists. Bullets rang from the Space Marine's armour. A keening beam of las energy took off Sergeant Furion's leg at the knee, and he fell with a roar of pain.
"Sight targets and return fire!"
barked Chaplain Storn. Volleys of bolts whipped through the mist and knocked half-seen shapes from their feet. Lydaran swore again as he saw a hammer blow slew to the right, then grind to a halt. Its hatch clanged open, and its commander, Sergeant Vastian, emerged, unhelmed, a trail of blood leaking from one ear and thin wisps of smoke curling up around him.
"I shot out the internal vox," he called to Lydaran. "We shall beg the machine spirit's forgiveness later."
"Good thinking, brother,"
replied the librarian, breaking off as a stooped figure sprinted out of the murk straight at him. It registered a hulking mutant, blasting charges clutched in its clawed fists, a scream of hatred twisting its features. Focusing his powers, Lydaran thrust the tip of his staff towards the cultist and sent a shockwave of force surging outwards. The mist peeled back, as though before the blast wave of an explosion, and the cultist was lifted from his feet and hurled backwards with a hiss of pain. The charges he clutched detonated a moment later, the fiery flash illuminating the last moments of a handful of luckless cultists. Lydran's mind raced as he factored the sudden penetration of their vox network into his battle plan. The Terminators were all unhelmed now, crimson streaks on their skin showing where ears, nostrils and even eyes had bled under the sustained psycho-auditory bombardment. Their expressions were stony and furious, tainted by webs of black lines like worms beneath their flesh.
"I think we can safely say the enemy are here in force," called Apothecary Lourdes, as he ran to Sergeant Furion's aid.
"But is this their idea of an ambush, or simply some defensive measure triggered by our arrival?"
asked Storn.
If it is a trap, it is a poor one, replied Lydran, hurling another blast force into the mist and scattering a charging mob of cultists. Bolt shells took the ones who staggered back to their feet. We are inconvenienced, but nothing more. We push on to the minehead at once.
He looked back, gesturing at the armor glass canopy of Vengeful for the pilot to lift off. He saw the man wave a hand in reply, noted that the gunner was slumped, unmoving, over his station at the pilot's back, and winced. The jamming signal would have been hard on the unaugmented crew helots, and he thanked the Primarch that at least one of them had been able to withstand it long enough to shoot out the Vox unit. The gunship's engines howled, and it dusted off. As it took to the air, a thick column of laser energy stabbed from the murk and scored a deep gash in the Thunderhawk's fuselage. Lydran heard the roar of engines the instant before a ragged column of enemy vehicles surged into view. He saw mining trucks pressed into cult service, cultists leaning over the heavy lasers with their goggles flashing. Around them raced lighter prospecting vehicles, and a swarm of bikes of a similar model to that he had pursued through Hive Spire weeks earlier. Lydran gave no command. None was needed. As one, the Imperial fists opened fire upon the attacking vehicles, venting their pent-up fury upon them. Lasblasts tore through rugged frontal armor. Bolt shells punched into the skulls and bodies of drivers, riders, and crewmen, and blew them apart in bloody sprays. Lydran roared with effort and anger as he drove his mine deep into the ground beneath a speeding truck and wrenched the earth upwards with a mighty heave that flipped the vehicle into the air. It came down with a sickening crash, skidding through the mud before exploding in a bright fireball. Hammerblow fired a shell almost point-blank into another racing vehicle and blew it apart in a spectacular shower of shrapnel. Brother Geshmund and Blade Indomitable focused their fire into a storm that ripped through the enemy bikers to devastating effect. There were casualties, of course. A mining laser punched through the chest of one of the aggressors of Squad Justice, and the warrior crumpled without a sound. Heavy caliber fire hammered Squad Furion, felling one of their number and leaving another with a bloody stump where his right forearm had been. A lucky shot from another mining laser stretched out to sweep a passing Storm Talon from the air, skewering the gunship and sending it spiralling down into a quarry pit to explode out of sight. Still, thought Lydran, as he rolled aside from the churning drill prow of one of the trucks, the assault had the feel of desperation more than a planned attack. This sort of armoured thrust might have shattered a Gyrish platoon had they come to purge the perfidy lurking in Delve Mine, but against the Imperial fists, it was little more than a forlorn hope. He came back to his feet and swung his stave hard, hammering a cultist from the saddle of her bike. The vehicle sped on into the murk, wobbling off its wheels just as it vanished. The rider was thrown into the mud, dead before she hit the ground. Hammerblow fired again, the mist jumping at the shockwave generated by its mighty demolition cannon. Dirt, fire, sundered ferrocrete and twisted metal fountained as two of the light prospector buggies were blasted apart as one, and suddenly the last of the cult armor was in retreat. The vehicles heeled around as though at some unheard command and raced back towards the minehead, looming a few hundred yards distant.
"Full advance!" bellowed Lydran,
ensuring he was heard even over the continuous hammer of gunfire. Cultists poured in towards them from every side. Bullets and blasts raked the strike force, causing a Terminator to stagger and curse, and taking a Hellblaster's head off with a lucky shot. Yet, the enemy's assault had failed utterly to break the Space Marine lines. Like a vast juggernaut gaining momentum, the Imperial fists advanced. Their tanks flanked out to either side, rumbling through the mist and keeping pace with the loping gait of the Space Marines themselves. One of the Strike Force's Tech Marines had disembarked from the second gunship, and now he compelled his Thunderfire cannon to advance, the tracked artillery piece cycling its barrels with loud thumps as it lobbed munitions into the onrushing foe. Lydaran and Lourdes led one spearhead of brothers and Storn the other. Two prongs of yellow-armoured warriors driving inexorably towards the enemy's fortress. Soaring fire whipped down from the defensive towers that flanked the minehead, throwing up puffs of dust and mud as they stitched through the Space Marine lines. The access shafts of the mine itself were protected by a heavy plasteel blast door, almost as high as the walls that ringed the compound, and stamped with the crossed laser symbol of Clan Delve. The entire armoured mass was sunken into a rocky cliff face that itself showed extensive signs of excavation and fortification. Much of it looked recent to Lydran's eye, additional bolstering in case of besiegement. Gun turrets nestled in flak-boarded holes in the rock face, barrels tracking right and left as they sprayed fire at the oncoming Space Marines.
"Push up! Neutralize their defences!" shouted Lydran. "With the greatest pleasure, Brother Librarian,"
boomed Geshmund, and he lumbered along to Lydaran's right. The dreadnought didn't slow, but carefully lined up his assault cannon and then triggered the weapon. The barrels howled up to speed, and detonations ripped along the cliff face around the blast doors. Geshmund annihilated one turret, then tracked his fire into the next one, and the next. At the same time, the exceptional strategic capabilities and rigorous codex learnings of the Imperial Fists came into play. Even without direct orders, the gunship crews knew exactly how to aid their comrades' advance. Arrayed in a V formation, four Storm Talons and two Thunderhawks roared overhead and let fly as one against the Minehead Gate. Rockets streaked down in swarms. Lasfire and explosive bolts fell like rain. Explosions blossomed across the blast doors. Metal melted into glowing slag in heartbeats and peeled apart, collapsing upon itself. Cultists threw themselves flat with wails of terror as the rain of ordnance came down, and the Imperial Fist's sharpshooters ensured they didn't get the chance to rise again. Lydran felt a surge of fierce satisfaction as a massive breach was blasted in the gates. The turrets around them burned and one of the defence towers toppled, trailing flame like a comet's tail. The last handful of cult armour had turned at bay before the gates and was firing madly, heretics in utility suits and sullied Gyrish uniforms kneeling in the mud as they shot desperately at the Imperial Fists with autoguns and crew-served stubbers.
"Breach!" bellowed Chaplain Storn. "We have a breach! Crush the defenders and purge the mine! Leave none alive! Father is your priority!" commanded Lydran, running up the slope with one hand extended and a geokinetic shield swirling before him. Bullets and grenades whined from it, and he felt his face stretch into a cold and mirthless smile at the ineffectual attacks of his foes. Now they would see what it meant to stand against the might of the Emperor's angels. Then he felt it, his empiric senses picking up a mighty surge below. Energy. Fury. Tectonic force channeled and unleashed in a ruinous shockwave that was even now racing up from the depths with the ferocity of an avalanche. Lydran's eyes widened in horror, and he slowed, turning and drawing breath to cry a warning. The ground leapt beneath his feet. It erupted. Rock and soil and fallen bodies transformed into a shredded blizzard, and he felt himself lifted bodily from the disintegrating ground. Then he was falling. Falling amidst tumbling rock and wreckage and flashes of yellow armour. Lydran unclenched his teeth as the furious buffeting finally stopped, his disorientation and pain overwhelming. Dust flowed into his lungs, and he choked for a moment before his superior physiology filtered the invasive particles and stilled the muscle convulsions in his chest. Lydran blinked. He was lying on his front atop a mound of rubble. He couldn't feel his left arm below the elbow. Steeling himself, he looked and saw that a massive lump of yellow-painted metal had crushed the limb. It was the front right fairing of Blade Indomitable.
he realized with a sick lurch. Where the rest of the Predator was, Lydran had no idea. But half of one of his arms was lost beneath this torn fragment of the vehicle, and his pistol with it. Dust thickened the air, turning already watery daylight into a turgid murk. Lydran took a deep breath, then pulled. Once. Hard. Sinew stretched and tore. Mangled flesh parted. Shattered bone crackled as it gave entirely, its jagged edges gouging at flesh, now stretched taut and tearing it further. Blood squirted hot and red, swiftly turning to gory paste amidst the drifting dust. Pain shot through him, bad enough to set black starbursts speckling his vision. The arm still wasn't free. He cursed, shooting a glance about him to see if the foes were near. He had a dim impression of shadowy solidity not far away through the haze, of light filtering down from somewhere above, but he saw no sign of movement.
Dawn, help me endure this, and do what needs must, Lydran muttered, and prepared to pull again.
Rubble crunched. Something big moved. Adrenaline surged through the librarian, and he reached for his powers, though he knew that he was too woozy and disorientated to use them well. Then he relaxed as Apothecary Lourdes knelt next to him.
"Brother Librarian, let me," he said, the thin beam of a lascutter extending from his vambrace-mounted Narthesium.
Lydran saw that Lourdes had a vicious scalp wound, his skull visibly dented and cracked where something had struck him. Swift, congealing blood caked one side of Lourdes's face, vivid crimson beneath a clinging layer of dust. The apothecary's eye on that side was a burst sack, its fluids tracking viscous tears down his cheek. Yet Lourdes proceeded with his duty as though he had suffered no more than a bruise.
"Brother,"
breathed Lydran.
"Bionics exist for a reason, Aster," said Lourdes, his clipped tones revealing nothing of the agony he must be in. "We will both need them after this."
A quick slice of the lascutter parted ceramite, flesh, and bone. White fire shot down Lydran's nerve endings, redoubling as Lourdes applied a cauterizing unguent to the stump of his elbow, and the flesh sizzled and seared. Then Lydran was on his feet, staff in hand, shaking the last of the shock from his mind and helping his comrade to rise.
"They sapped us," he said. "They must have set the charges through works extending directly below the minehead approach. Thrown alive. We walked right into it."
His shock and shame were physical weights dragging at his limbs. Lydran had been as sure as he could possibly be that Renwick believed what he was saying was true. His Vanguard spies and Servo-Skull reconnaissance flights had revealed nothing of the covert preparations that must have been made to fashion this deadly trap. How could he have allowed himself to be deceived again, despite his every effort to the contrary? Lydran's self-loathing knew no bounds, threatening to drown him in black misery, far worse than any amount of physical pain. He had failed himself. His chapter, Brother Captain Tor, even the Primarch and the Emperor both.
"To trigger so deep a blast, though, so widespread, they must have destroyed half the damn mine complex," exclaimed Lourdes. "I wouldn't be surprised if they've caved the central shaft in, triggering a shockwave that close to the minehead. Clan Delve's holdings will be in ruins, thousands of miners buried alive."
"I doubt the cult cares," said Lydran,
unable to keep the bitterness and the fury from his voice.
"I swear on the Primarch's hand, brother, that this is the last time I will underestimate the lunacy of those we face. They have deceived me, and I failed you all. They have destroyed themselves in their fervor to destroy us, and our battle brothers have paid the price."
"We are not beaten yet, Brother Librarian," said Lourdes. "We need to get out of this damn pit, rally our brothers, and finish this."
Lydran felt shame at his momentary weakness, but he crushed it down, alongside all the anger and pain and resentment of this grueling campaign.
"You are correct, brother," he said.
Lydran braced his staff in the crook of his one complete arm, unlocked his helm from his belt, and lifted it towards his ear, hopefully. He winced at the continued howl of static that issued from within, and maglocked it back at his hip.
"We will have to rally our brothers without Vox."
"First thing is to get out of here, then," said Lordus,
swiping caked blood from his face and discharging a mist of greenish fluid across the wound in his skull. Lydran paused, questing out with his psychic powers. He sensed vibrations approaching through the bedrock.
"Something is working its way towards us," he said,
casting about through the swirling murk.
"That way."
As he pointed with the stump of his arm, there came a grinding rumble, followed by the crack and tumble of falling stone. Something roared amidst the murk, and Lydran shared a look with Lordus. No human throat had made that sound. The librarian hefted his stave one-handed. Beside him, the apothecary checked the load on his pistol and extended the blade of his lascutter to almost a foot in length. Dust sparked and vanished as it touched the searing surgical blade. The first mutant came at them in a rush. It was huge, twisted out of true by grotesque masses of muscle and chitin that bloated its frame. Lydran recognised the telltale chitinous plates of Tyranid bioforms, and knew that his apothecary's suspicions had been correct. Its face was misshapen, a thick purple tongue lolling from crooked jaws, yellow eyes staring with idiot hatred. It swung a massive pickhammer at them, a bastardised mining tool, too large for any normal human to wield, and Lydran barely caught the blow on his stave. He cursed and staggered, off balance without his missing arm. The thing swung again, the head of its hammer sending up a shower of pulverized rubble as it struck the ground. It roared, spittle flying from its jaws, and Lordus took his chance to drive his lascutter's blade through the thing's mouth and up into its skull. Flesh cooked and spat, teeth shattered. Lordus wrenched his fist free of the thing's maw, and it staggered, black ichor pumping over its jaws and pattering to the floor. It collapsed backwards with a groan, but three more of the hulking abominations trampled it into the floor as they came at the Space Marines.
"Get back!" roared Lydran, lashing out with his mind.
Rock and stone flew up in a shower that lacerated one of the monsters, while the force of the shockwave hit so hard that the next one was flung from its feet amidst the sounds of rupturing flesh and shattering bone. Lordus shot the last creature through the chest, the bolt round sending a spray of gore and bone fountaining from its back. Still the thing came on, swinging a huge length of rebar. It struck Lordus a glancing blow and sent him staggering back even as the lacerated mutant surged to its feet again, black fluids flowing from its flesh in rivulets.
"Damn, things are tough!"
gasped Lordus, grabbing the rebar in his free palm as it swung at him again. He wrenched the crude weapon from his assailant's grasp, spun it around, and rammed it through the mutant's throat. It crashed backwards, ichor jetting, limbs spasming.
"Not that tough,"
spat Lydran. With a vicious twist of his powers, he gathered the dust particles into the air and smashed them back together as a solid lump of rock that encased the lacerated mutant's head. The thing went wild, staggering and flailing, pounding at the stone with its lumpen fists as it began to suffocate. The stone cracked, but Lydran wasn't finished. Another psychic wrench, this one hard enough to make his vision wave, and whispers shiver through the back of his mind, and he twisted the new-made bolter through 180 degrees, taking his enemy's head with it. The thing's spine snapped with an audible pop, and it collapsed to the floor like a puppet with its strings cut. More shapes moved in the murk. More lumpen mutants lumbered towards them.
"Can we escape through the tunnel they are coming in from?"
asked Lordus, gunning one of the beasts down with a trio of shells. Lydran quested out with his overtaxed powers and grunted in frustration.
"No, that bore goes down deep.
and I'm not sure it ends anywhere but caved in stone. They must have concealed these things in hardened shelters before they detonated their charges, hoping that some of them would survive and dig their way out. Straight on top of anyone who survived the collapse, said Lourdes, cursing as his pistol clicked dry. Another mutant swung for him, and Lydran blocked its attack with a groan of psychic effort. The circuitry of his hood was glowing hot again, and warning chimes were ringing from its emitters. This was no desperate defense, he said. This was their trap. The entire damned mine complex. Renwick sent us straight into its jaws. Or he was tricked into doing so, said Lourdes, stepping back from the wild swing of a huge mattock. Lydran lunged with his stave and cracked a mutant's skull. Come now, brother. We will have to scale our way out. He and Lourdes turned from the mutants and ran. Part of Lydran raged against it. Retreat in the face of the enemy, the admission of defeat. It wasn't the way of the Imperial Fists. The other, wiser part of him, remembered that their proud martial history boasted more than its share of valiant but doomed last stands. He would be damned if he and his surviving brothers were going to be added to that list. Here, the rubble slopes. I think we can make it, he shouted, surging up the tumbled rockfall and digging his toes into the debris. Right behind you, brother. The rest of Lourdes's words were driven from him in a plosive breath, as a mutant smashed his legs from under him with a sidelong swipe, and the apothecary hit the rubble chest first. Lydran spun and hurled a blast of psychic force, only for lancing pain to race through his mind. For an instant, reality turned crimson and green at the edges, and dark veins crept across his vision. Too much, he thought. Too much. Too quickly. He couldn't risk using his powers again. Could feel the warp predators circling the light of his soul. They were almost upon him. Lydran's